You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. Now, if you're familiar with the actor Winston Duke, there's a good chance you know him from his breakout role as M'Baku in Black Panther.
We have watched and listened from the mountains. We have watched with disgust as your technological advancements have been overseen by a child. Who scoffs at tradition. And now you want to hand the nation over to this prince who could not keep his own father safe.
Or maybe you remember him as the dorky dad fighting for his family's survival in Jordan Peele's Us.
Now, I thought I already done told y'all to get off my property, okay? So if y'all want to get crazy, we can get crazy. Now, the cops are already on their way.
So you might not recognize Duke right away when you watch him starring in his latest film, 9 Days. Written and directed by Edson Oda, the movie is a surreal exploration of what it means to be human. Duke plays a character named Will, who was once alive, but now is tasked with interviewing and selecting a spirit to be born into the real world. Here's Duke in a scene from the film with Zazie Beetz, who plays one of the spirits, named Emma.
Don't you get hungry?
I'm like you. I don't get hungry, but I can eat.
So why don't you eat?
Because I don't get hungry.
It's not really the point of eating.
For me, it is.
What's it like?
What?
Be alive?
Maybe you'll find out.
While the film is abstract in its structure, it came from a deeply personal place for first-time director Oda. Winston Duke told me how the project came to be and what it was like collaborating on such a unique work.
It was inspired by his uncle that committed suicide. So his uncle committed suicide at 50 years old. And the family pretty much just reduced this man's narrative to just that act. So Edson was just told, you know, growing up, don't be like your uncle. Your uncle was weak. No other information. Just, we don't talk about him. Don't be like your uncle. Your uncle was weak. So as he got older and dealt with his own depression, own mental health things, he researched this uncle because he knew something was up. And he found out that this uncle was an artist that didn't get to practice his art. He lived the life of a translator. You know, they're Japanese immigrants to Brazil. And uncle didn't talk about his mental health stuff and his depression. So he really wrote this film as an opportunity to redefine the life of his uncle and give his uncle a different narrative, reimagining his life in an afterlife situation. And that's the intention of the film. So overall, it's something that came about with so much clarity, specificity, and intention that inviting us, inviting actors into it, it was already something that was really passion-filled, that came out of that family need for redefinition. It was already so full that, you know, it fed us sometimes more than we fed it.
I love this this portrait that you've painted for us of the multiple steps of collaboration that for viewers, for audiences, you know, we see final products, but often we experience all of this work, all of this genius, all of these revisions, all of the agonizing journey inward. You know, we just experience the final product of it as though it was created whole cloth. And so it's so valuable, right, to have you walk us through that. I'm wondering, because you name-checked this just a bit, when you talk about Edson Oda as a Japanese-Brazilian first-gen immigrant, you yourself as first-gen immigrant here in the U.S. from Trinidad Tobago, I'm wondering if there was a connection in part around that idea of literally journeying for the opportunity for life, for remaking what life might be and the ways in which it is good and bad, hard and beautiful, kind of embedded in those immigrant stories.
100%. And, you know, that's how we really connected and how I believe I got the role. Edson didn't write this with me in mind. It was to reflect the experience of his uncle, who's a Japanese man. So at first he really was looking for an Asian actor to really reflect that and hold a lot closer and exist a lot closer to his own personal story. And when we met, we spoke for maybe 2.5 to 3 hours and then spent 15 minutes talking about the movie. And what the bulk of that conversation was what it means to be this immigrant man and dealing with erasure and invisibility in a country that's like white dominated, and like what it means to like work and find our way through this industry, work and find our way through academia, work and find our way all the way through all these different like micro and macro aggressions. And we had such a beautiful conversation that he was like, oh, wow, we're really similar. And I really trust that you could really capture what this story is about because you understand it. You understand grief. You understand pain. You understand what this is, but from a really nuanced perspective point of view. And, you know, we found common ground, you know, and you know, I'm hesitant to keep saying the word universality because like none of our experience are both universal, but also not like it's nuanced in that way. But I think we did find a weird universality where he said, I believe you can be a really great reflection of what my uncle was or could have aspired to be. And recently I heard him say in an interview, I was taught in school. That's what he said about himself. He said, I was taught in school when casting, you really want to cast for not who the character is simply, but who the character can be. And I thought Will really could be Winston Duke. Will really could be Winston Duke in his light. And I think that's where the film erupts into. I play Will in a lot of his shadow. I play a lot of the shadow personality of Will. And then he finds his light as we go through the film. That's where that really big monologue really captures is that light. And yeah, so like we really connected on the immigrant experience and the nuances of that immigrant experience. You know what I mean? Like, and yeah, that's really how I think I actually ended up with this job. And I said to him, hey, I you don't have to choose me. I just really loved your script, one. And whether you choose me or not, I just want your movie to be made. I just want your movie to be out there in the world because it deserves to be seen. And if that's with me, you're going to get a whole bunch of stuff that comes with me. You know what I mean? You're going to get a lot of free story that comes with me, and it's going to be a lot more specific, you know, if it's Winston Duke's body, if it's a black man that is in a story about psychiatry and psychology and internal life and internal, you know, work. You're going to have a different story when it's a 280-pound man, black, traditionally masculine appearing man on screen. You're going to get a whole different story than if it's a white man, than if it's an Asian man, than if it's a white woman. And I say that because other than the fact that he is referred to as he, it's a very non-gendered experience in 9 days.
So I want to go right into that. I want to go into this representation of a 280 black masculine man, in part because I just, to be honest about what's going on backstage at the Takeaway, when my production team came and said, hey, We have a chance to have this big fine man from Black Panther on the show. Don't we all want that? And everyone wanted that. The girls and the boys and queer folk and straight folk and everybody on the team was like, yes, we would definitely like to have him. And I have to say, it was shallow. It was a shallow moment of just remembering the joy of the Black Panther and the very particular representation of Black masculinity that you bring us there. And then this, I really was not ready for it. Surreal, entirely different, almost stage actor versions, multiple versions of Black manhood, masculinity, femininity, interiority that you do. So is that just fun for you as an actor to move across that range?
Yeah, I think that's the real work. And that's, how do I answer that? Yes, it's exceptionally fun. And that's the work I really want to do because I've never wanted to be trapped. And during quarantine, I sat with myself and really redefined, or not redefined, but articulated what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. I realized I've been doing it for a while, but I never put it into words. And I did that. And I said, I want to live in my imagination. I want to live in imaginary circumstances. I got into acting to escape and play for the rest of my life. I wanted to engage people in really cool conversations, but also just offer them alternatives to how hard everyday life is already. So sometimes my work should be able to do some of the grieving and painful work that they just can't do and allow them to like enter into conversations after seeing me do that work. Or it should just be so fun that they just laugh their faces off and it creates like a doorway into some joy. You know what I mean? So I really articulated that over the quarantine. And that is the work. It's flexibility. It's a spectrum. It's openness. It's acceptance. It's all these different things. And that's what 9 days is. It's duality. It's accepting light. It's accepting dark. It's accepting the light and the shadow. And that's what Will is. He's a shadow character that has to embrace his light because the light is really vulnerable. The light is where most of us connect with each other. Like most of us connect with each other in happiness. Most of us connect with each other in some version of honesty or perceived honesty. We're not all honest. I'm sure we all know that. cryptic.
Okay, you're clearly subtweeting someone here.
They know who they are. But, you know, we usually connect with each other in light or perceived light. And this is a character that's running away from that perceived light because that perceived light comes with a lot of vulnerability. It comes with the vulnerability of pain, the vulnerability of loss, the vulnerability of, you know, yeah, grief and loss, because that light, you tend to accept things into you and have people or things get closer to you. And that's what Will is running away from until he just can't run from it any longer. You know, it's a circle. So you can run away as far as you can, but if it's a circle, you'll just run right back into the thing.
Right back into yourself.
Yeah, you'll just run right back into it, you know. And that's one of my explanations why I'm always late, is that I say I'm from the Caribbean. And one of the reasons I think Caribbean people are always late or slow moving is because they know they're on an island. It's a big circle. So if you go left long enough, you're going to end up right where you started. So why be in a hurry, you know? So.
there's so much there. On this question of loss and grief and pain, I just have to ask about the other film you're working on, Black Panther 2, without Chadwick Boseman, the light that went out for all of us, but so much so more for those of you who knew and worked with and loved him. I'm just wondering what it's been like there on that set without Boseman.
It's It's a visible and tangible hole. Like, he's no longer there, and he's no longer there in so many ways. And he was the linchpin, you know, that held everything together in a very particular way. Narratives continue, but you still feel that hole, and you still feel his presence not being there on set, because he was on Black Panther 1, he was the one that's always weekly being like, people need to blow off some steam. I'm gonna have people over to my house. All the cast and the stunt people and all those folks, they're gonna come over. I'm gonna have my buddy who's a drummer drum. We're gonna like like have some food. I'm gonna order some drinks, and we're all just gonna hang out and just de-stress. And that was a regular occurrence, and he was really, he had incredible emotional sensitivity. And how do people describe that again? Emotional intelligence. That's the word.
Yeah, the EI.
Yes, he had great emotional intelligence to know when people needed a break, when people needed to connect, and when people really need to just rally and continue doing the work. So you could always feel him on set. You could always feel the days when he wasn't on set. And in a space where you become so interconnected, it's a giant hole. It's a giant hole. But we're being incredibly respectful with his narrative. We're being incredibly respectful about the loss. And that's what Wakanda Forever is about. It's an exceptional, beautiful piece of work. And we're really excited. I'm doing my best to not give any spoilers. I will not ask for any. Around, sniffing around, like, don't say nothing.
Well, we won't ask. The last question, though. You are also going to be the voice of Bruce Wayne on what will be an audio project. And so since I've been hanging out in the land of audio and radio now for a few months, I'm fascinated by this. And I'm wondering how you've been preparing for that role.
You know, I just dove right into it. I'm happy to say that we finished it already. We've finished it already, and we did that at the beginning of working on Black Panther. I was actually working on this podcast, and it was a great feeling. I actually believe I got that role because of 9 days after they saw 9 days, and they were like, "We love that kind of internal work." And it's a story of more of a cerebral internal look at Bruce Wayne in a really specific circumstance, that he's very vulnerable. It's a really big shift from how we usually see Bruce Wayne. It's a bit of a reimagination of Bruce Wayne in this circumstance. And it's exceptionally fun. It's more really cool acting work. It's really great guy in cool circumstance that is pushing him and is very emotionally available, which is not the case for Bruce Wayne in most other circumstances. He's a guy who needs a lot of therapy.
All the therapy. It's what makes the Lego version of him so funny. Yes. He has a lot of emotional.
He needs a lot of therapy. So it's a really cool piece. And, you know, as a black man in this country, I've always loved superheroes, but I've always loved superheroes for maybe a different reason than most of like the dominant culture in this country usually loves them, which is, I've always felt like we needed our own superhero. And sometimes, like, historically, it feels like the history of what we've gone through, the history of what we've had to deal with has been so almost insurmountable. And sometimes the future of how much work there's still to do, it's like, we need a Superman. We need an alien to come down here and just like put it all together and make it right. So this idea of there were these super people that were willing to take on all the pains of the world and put it on themselves always felt right, because it felt so insurmountable to me. So I've always been in love with superheroes for that reason. I've always been like, how is it that like indigenous people were supposed to not be destroyed by these Europeans if they didn't have superpowers. You know what I mean?
That's why, like, Wakanda needed to share the vibranium a little sooner.
They needed to do it sooner. You know what I mean? Help the folks. So, like, I've always just been attached to superheroes, just being like, that's what everybody needed for the longest time. They just needed some superheroes. They just needed some superheroes to attack the conquistadors and stop that whole shit from happening. You know? So, I love superheroes for that specific reason. And, yeah, it's really good to just continue working in that kind of genre.
Winston Duke, we so appreciate you having the range to both be our butt-kicking superhero and our interior life sort of focused around all the work that we all have to do inside as well. Winston Duke is the star of 9 Days. It is currently in theaters. Winston, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. So good.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.